Hello, Church. This is an additional sermon recorded, which I hope you might find encouraging and good. It's entitled Relational Prayer. I'm just kind of going over some points that I've made earlier, particularly to the Wednesday morning prayer time. And I just want to share these thoughts with you because I don't want some people to have them and some of you don't. So I hope you'll be blessed, encouraged and challenged by this particular additional recording. Once again, it's important to understand that the writer of Luke, the writer of the book of Acts, Luke, laid down the priorities or the prerequisites or the commands the way that he has. There was a pattern that he did. He laid them down to ensure that the pattern given to Moses way back in Genesis, which Paul mentions in Hebrew, is still to be pursued, still to be obeyed and lived out. And no doubt you have already, and I'm sure you've already listened to many of the sermons, and then of course the one entitled Talking to God, and I've laid down those 4 points, I think. So I don't want to repeat myself, but what I do want to do is share specifically on point 4. So I'm hoping you might remember that. And I want to do this from the Acts 2 perspective of how such a life of prayer, relational prayer, can affect and enable mission. Let me just reiterate, and I've said and I've shared this before, that the church itself, you and I, are not naturally nice people. People might not understand this, actually. They may even disagree. But hear me out just for a moment, will you? You see, the Apostle Paul talks about this in Romans, where there is an old man and a new man, or a new person, or a new nature, old nature, in me, the Christian, struggling, fighting each other on a daily basis. The thing I want to do, says Paul, I don't want to do it. The thing I should be doing, I don't do it. There is a war going on within me. So there is both an unnatural and a natural situation going on. I do not, within the natural context of things, like people. It's the way this world is. Okay, an incredible teaching about the dual track of natural and supernatural that I will share as time goes on. We are natural enemies because sin has distorted our lives. But to be a natural loving people is a daily choice, which is an intentional daily choice. Now, that fourth point was about God speaks to us to bring us into a loving relationship with his church, with his people. That was one of the points I made about God talking. It is this point that I really want to just share more about. See, you can love someone without actually having a relationship with. For example, the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10. He showed love to the wounded Jewish man, but he didn't even know him. And he left him in the care of another, even though he paid for the care. And what I love about his love, which is what we call the general Christian love, the one that we're all supposed to have and pursue, he left an opening to come back. Whatever that man needed, he said to the innkeeper, I will come back. I love that wonderful sense of open love. And this is the real love that Jesus commands all of us to have. It's the kind of love that just wants to do good for whoever is in need. But God also wants us to be more specific about loving relationships with each other. And these perhaps are more challenging and more specific because it's not about a general call to love. It's a call to love specifically through developing relationships. Some people are starved for relationships. Others are scared of relationships and want to keep people at a distance for a variety of reasons. I would like us to consider relational love from the Acts 2 church perspective, which is about trying to or seeking to improve in a nurturing and an atmosphere where relationships are highly valued and intentionally sought after. Let me repeat that. The Acts 2 church, relationships that they developed, this extraordinary atmosphere was about relationships are highly valued and they were intentionally sought after. Didn't just happen. Ooh, no, no, no. See, this kind of love combined with the Good Samaritan's general love gives the outsider, the non church person, a visual glimpse of the love of God amongst us, within us. A love that the communities around the early Acts 2 church noticed and commented on, and enabled the church to find favor among and within the community. That's an incredible result for the church. But generally, church isn't very much liked by its neighbors, really. But they did not go looking to find favor or acceptance from the community. No, all they were going to do was to live and love and serve amongst each other, and that spilled over beautifully, so it was noticed. The relationship that we, the leadership, yeah, at Staplehurst Free Church, are working on, developing, and long for is to commit ourselves to pursuing and developing. And this is what we're looking to. We're wanting to develop and pursue personal relationships, growing relationships, supportive relationships, and faith-building relationships. John Piper's notes on relational love has proved invaluable at this time. Number one, personal relationships. Now, personal means not just functional. Folks, you and I can have a functional relationship with anyone, particularly with a doctor or a lawyer or a plumber or even a pastor or a teammate or a teacher, without that relationship being personal. It's just a functional one. And to be personal would mean that you and I would relate to each other on a deeper level, not just about professional things. Now, Jesus had concentric cycles of increasingly intimate personal relationships. There were the 70 that he appointed and he sent out in Luke chapter 10. Then there were the 12 that he chose to be with him through his entire ministry, Mark chapter 3. Then there was Peter, James, and John. He took them with him on the Mount of Transfiguration, into the house where he raised the little girl, into the seclusion of the Garden of Gethsemane. He was personally closer to them than he was to the others. And finally, there was John, who was actually called at least four times the disciple whom Jesus loved. The point is that Jesus himself had a cluster of personal relationships in varying depths. These did not become cliquish. Although Jesus had some deep personal relationships, he was always open and he was always welcoming to all. This is an extraordinary thing, okay? It's a factual reality of any church, particularly one that wants to grow, that neither the pastor nor anyone else can have personal relationships with everyone in the church. Now, from Scripture, the aim is not that everyone should relate to everyone in a personal manner, but that an atmosphere of love is generated to enable the possibility of deepening relationships. We have a circle, but it is not closed. A circle of close friendships with an opening that creates a possibility of welcoming someone else in. That's what I'm talking about. Number two, growing relationships. Now, this simply means that we are not to stay at the level of superficiality, knowing just a few personal things about people and asking glibly how things are, but never really going deep with each other. And that is a problem for many Christians, even within the leadership itself. I'm not talking necessarily of Staplehurst Free Church here. We don't actually know each other, and we aren't intentionally getting to know each other. We don't go deep. But the biblical command to bear each other's burdens, Galatians 6, seems to imply something much deeper than a passing hello, how are you doing, how's the weather in your part of the world. Now, I use the word deep, but I prefer growing, because relationships are always in process. There's a journey. They are not static, but they take intentional time, energy, commitment, and sometimes sacrifice. Now, depending on the people, some relationships can take off quickly, others are slow, but our aim is more and more year at Staplehurst Free Church to have an atmosphere, or to create and to generate and to develop by intentional choices. We want to nurture create something that enables the possibility of growing relationships. How is your relationship with your friends, in your house group, in your clique? Is it growing? Is it going deeper? Or rather, ships that pass at night. Number three, we want it to be a supportive relationship. Now, this is extraordinarily important, okay? Enabling a growing relationship to deepen would be a relationship that is supportive. This is where love especially comes in. We're talking about relationships of love, and love means that you and I have a heart to lighten each other's load as we get to know them. We want to be a burden bearer. We want to be a helper. We want to be a strengthener, an encourager. It is true, we need all these things ourselves, but if you go into a relationship mainly to use the other person to meet your needs, that relationship will most likely collapse. I'm sure you understand this. I have had terrible experiences and still continue to do, and it takes great discernment to understand boundaries, understand when enough's enough, because there are people who just drain you. It's all about them. It's all about the hard day they are having, the job that they're doing, the problems they're facing at home. And of course, once they have offloaded and are bored, burdened, they feel so much happier, and you're left with all the drags of life, and nothing about that friendship is good, because certainly it's not a supportive one. Relationships, They strive when we try to outdo each other in supporting, not in being supported. This is extraordinary. Listen to me again. Relationships are exciting when I try and outdo the person that I'm relating to in supporting them. I just want to do it. It's like, ooh, how can I bless you? How can I meet this? How can I do that? There's something so freeing about that. Number four, it must be a faith-building relationship. And so we can call these relationships of love faith building. God has designed us for relationships to help each other live by faith in future grace. This is what I mean by this. Faith means being satisfied with all that God has for us in Jesus. So all Christian relationships should have this as their goal, to help each other stay satisfied, completed in God. Many of us have some time or other, maybe some are at this point in time themselves, a crisis of faith. Will they keep trusting God in God's future grace? And future grace is about what is yet to come. For example, if I know I'm going to maybe face a heavy tax bill, or if I know I have an impending operation, or if I know there's a problem that I know is going to come because of something that has happened, am I, in the relationship that I'm with, going to enable me to have the faith to face that when it comes? That is what I'm talking about when we are building faith for the future as well. Yes, I may preach. And yes, I may teach all about how to stay true. I may teach and preach about being faithful. I can teach and preach about how to stay satisfied and complete in God. But preaching is not enough. Relationally, we can do so much more. And of course, house groups are a wonderful place for such relationships to be formed, to be developed, to be strengthened, to be encouraged. Now, Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 to 13 says, "See to it that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God, but encourage one another daily as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." Folks, the Christian is called to endure, okay? We are called to persevere. Understand that? Yes. Because the Christian road is going to be a very hard one at times. It is why Jesus said, "Narrow is the road that very few will choose, but wide is the one that's going to be understandably so easier, they think." Now in Hebrews chapter 12, I love it. You and I have witnesses that are cheering us on this journey. These are what we call the saints of old who have run the relational and Christian race before us. And they have gathered, as it were, along the marathon route to say, through the testimony of their lives, hey, by faith we did it and you can do it too. I'm sure that we would know that the book of Hebrews was written to a church that was getting old and settling into the world and losing its wartime mentality, and it was beginning to drift along life without focus, without vigilance, without energy. Their hands were growing weak, their knees were feeble. It was just easier to meander in the crowd of life than to run the marathon. I don't know if you understand what that might mean. Maybe some of us are there. We've done it. We've tried it. We've built this church. Now I don't have the energy to do anything else, so I'm just going to sit here and hope and pray. I am sure that's what we might do. But I'm also sure that we have friends who have and are helping us along this path of living like and for Jesus. Even at this time of tiredness, even at this time of great pain or discomfort, they are intentionally strengthening my hands. They are intentionally making sure that my knees are strong again. They are making straight parts for me again, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather to be healed. Don't you just love those kind of people? Don't you just desire them? For them. And relationships, last but not least, is because of the glory of God. You see, you and I live in a time of overlap between the ages. Now, this is what one theologian has called the time between the times. Because so many people are blind to God's glory, we as God's people are to live, behave, serve, minister, do mission in such ways that people see God is alive in me, that the presence of Jesus is all around me, and the power of the Holy Spirit is upon me. We need that. We understand we have to pursue it. But notice Paul's examples, and this is interesting. Whatever you and I do, no matter what relationship we have, no matter where we at, with our service and ministry, whatever you eat or drink, then you must do that for the glory of God. No matter what it is, the most mundane, the most unimportant, the most exhilarating, whatever you and I are doing as Christians, the question is, are we living for the glory of God? Am I serving for His glory? Am I in my family, am I with my kids, with my wife, my husband, the way we do in our house, our holidays, our jobs, our service, everything about us, is it for the glory of God? Is it all about Him? And I am aware that although I have shared this, and there are wonderful friendships already amongst you, amongst us, there are groups that you already belong to. And in fact, if this was not the case, this particular building would not have come about. Your relationship with each other stands out, and God has made it possible. And I am here as a minister, as a pastor, because of that relational spirit among you that said yes. But is it real and visible for the people outside of those who know you to see God inside of you? And that I find a challenge. Our relationships must be highly valued as expressions of our passion for the supremacy of God's love. How do you exalt the supremacy of God's love? By trusting it, by helping other people trust it, by being satisfied with it, and by helping other people to be satisfied with it as well. Someone said to me, I choose as when I go to church, depending on who's preaching, depending on what kind of service. Folks, that is not right. That is not even biblical. If we have to make our choices based on what is good for me, many of us would not be doing anything. It is for the glory of God. And that's how we need to be viewing and looking at life. And so I want to bless you with this, that the sight of loving unity among the Christians grabs the attention of the non-Christian. It really does. It crashes through their intellect. It stirs up their conscience, and it creates a tumult of longing in their hearts, because they were created to enjoy the very thing that the church is called to demonstrate: love. May God bless us.